evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. This is Mark Levine. I want to talk about the attack on a passenger jet, Malaysian Airlines Boeing 777, that happened today, and why I think that basically Russia is to blame. We'll talk about that at length, and some other crazy stuff in the news, like the prosecutors that wanted to require a 17-year-old boy to make child pornography in order to stop child pornography. I'll explain a little bit later on. A lot to talk about. First of all, though, you need to know about me. I know that to some of you, there's some new stations that are carrying the show. Many of you have known I've been on the air for, 10 years? Longer. It'll be 11 years in June. No, June is past. It is 11 years. I've been 11 years on the radio. Those of you who don't know who I am, I'm a former congressional attorney for Congressman Barney Frank. A solid liberal through and through, but that doesn't mean I agree always with every aspect of the Democratic Party, because I'm a free-thinking person. I have all kinds of ideas. But there were a few people, apparently yesterday, that confused me with right-wing wacko Mark Levin. That's understandable. We have similar names. I'm L-E-V-I-N-E, Levine. He's L-E-V-I-N. As it happens, I was on radio before he was, but progressive radio doesn't get the same support conservative does. If you want to remember the difference between Mark Levin, with whom I don't look like him, talk like him, agree with him, or like him very much. If you want to know the difference between him and me, there's an easy way to remember the difference. I have a second E in my name. That second E stands for empathy. I have empathy. He lacks it. So when you talk about someone caring about immigrants coming into the United States, caring about income inequality, caring about being fair to women and to gay and lesbian people, and who cares about issues of race, and someone who has empathy for people, that's me, Mark Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E. Lots to talk about. Let's start with the horrific news that we found out. Noon today, something like that. We heard that a Boeing 777, and you know those are the largest passenger planes that exist. I don't think there are any larger ones. These are the jets that go intercontinental. If you've ever traveled to Europe, you may have been on one. I don't know if I've been on a 777. I've been on a 747, but 777, that's the new and best and biggest. Anyway, it's a very powerful, slow, lumbering passenger jet. And Malaysian Airways Flight 777 was taking off on a routine flight from Amsterdam in the Netherlands in Europe to Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia in Southeast Asia. And the plane did what planes do. It flew over other lands to get there. If you wanted to get from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur and you didn't want to fly over foreign territory, well, you'd either have to go around up through the Arctic Circle, down around Siberia and down that way, or I guess you could go around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa. Either way, your flight would take about three times longer than it should. Indeed, just about anywhere you go from Europe to Asia, you're going to cross over either Russia or part of the former Soviet Union. It's a massive country. Russia is the largest country on Earth. It stretches, 12 or 13 time zones? I lose count. Of course, Ukraine is the largest country in Europe. And Ukraine, most of us know, used to be part of the Soviet Union. But Ukraine has a separate history from Russia. It's a separate people. It is a separate language. And in Ukraine today, they speak both Ukrainian and Russian. Well, before we get to what happened today, I want to make sure that all of you are up to date on exactly what happened and why Ukraine and Russia are, well, if not at war with each other, let's just say in sharp disagreement with each other, although some may say at war. Make sure you know the past. So the Soviet Union, of course, consisted of Russia invading and conquering all kinds of nations around it. That included Ukraine, Belarus, these Slavic nations that might seem to have similar people but are actually very different peoples with different histories. Also the Baltic nations, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, conquered them. A number of Muslim nations, Kazakhstan. When you hear stand, by the way, that just means land. That's why you hear Pakistan, Afghanistan, Kazakhstan. So Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan were all conquered in Central Asia. Russia also conquered Armenia, Azerbaijan, all of Georgia as well. All of these once independent nations and peoples were conquered by Russia and formed part of the Soviet Union. And if that wasn't good enough, Russia wanted a further I was thinking of the ground invasion today. So please don't confuse. Let's go. We're talking about Russia. Russia wanted to invade Poland, what used to be Czechoslovakia, today is the Czech Republic and Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania and Bulgaria. Did I get the whole Warsaw Pact right? I think so. I think I've named them all. All of which to, I guess, protect itself or to really force these countries to no longer be democracies and force them. And East Germany, oh, forgot East Germany, of course, conquered the middle third of Germany. After World War II, Germany was split into three pieces. The eastern third was occupied by Poland and remains occupied by Poland. They forced all the Germans to leave. In fact, the furthest eastern portion is occupied to this day by Russia. Kaliningrad used to be the German town of Königsberg, the great Prussian town. The middle of Germany was conquered by Russia as East Germany by the Soviet Union, and then West Germany remained to the west. Anyway, Russia obviously expanded greatly and conquered all these other peoples. Well, with the end of the Soviet Union, with Gorbachev and then Boris Yeltsin taking over, the Soviet Union split apart into its respective states. Interestingly, that was actually what the Soviet Union was ostensibly supposed to be. It was supposed to be this union of socialist republics. That's what USSR stands for, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Soviet is sort of a way that a form of government. And these were supposedly socialist republics. And supposedly this was just a union of independent states. Much like you might think the United States is a union of states that became one country, or perhaps a better example would be the European Union, because the states still had, they're supposed to have independence. Of course, they weren't independent at all. They were all controlled by the Kremlin. Well, Ukraine was the largest country in Europe, and it was conquered by Russia and was under Soviet rule from 1917 all the way till the Soviet Union fell apart. Anyway, in 1993, when the Soviet Union fell apart, its component parts, Kazakhstan, Ukraine, and of course Russia, all had nuclear weapons because it was really just one government. And they placed most of them in Russia, but they certainly placed some nuclear weapons in Ukraine and some in Kazakhstan. So Ukraine actually includes all the territory, including this peninsula called Crimea, which was actually mostly Russian-born, but it attaches to Ukraine. That's the only physical attachment through a peninsula. And it had been in Ukraine ever since the 1950s. Anyway, in 1993, Russia did not want Ukraine to have nuclear weapons. So they said to Ukraine, we'll make you a deal. You get rid of your nuclear weapons, and we'll respect your independence, your full sovereignty, every aspect. We will protect your borders. And Russia agreed to protect Ukraine's borders, and so did the United States, and so did the United Kingdom, Great Britain. They all agreed to protect Ukraine's borders, and in return, Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons in 1993. Fast forward to 2000, and has it been since 2013? Maybe it was just this year. Seems like it's been a year now. I think it probably has been. Anyway, 2013, 2014, let's go 2013. So 2013, Ukraine was trying to sort of decide whether to focus more on the east or more on the west. And when you look at Ukraine on the map, you can understand that. You've got Russia and Belarus to its east. You've got Poland and NATO members like Slovakia and Romania and so forth to its west. And it kind of has to decide whether it wants to be facing east or facing west. And they elected one side, they elected another side. Like I said, Ukraine has both Ukrainian and Russian in its languages. And although the majority speaks Ukrainian, a very, very strong minority speaks Russian. And most of them are in the eastern part of the provinces. What happened was that in Ukraine, the the government was hopelessly corrupt. And the one that was corrupt was the one appointed or on the side of the eastern provinces. The Russian-speaking peoples had basically elected him, and he was hopelessly corrupt. And the people started to protest against his corruption in Kiev. Specifically, what they protested about, interestingly, was he rejected a treaty, a trade treaty, not a military treaty, whereby Ukraine would trade with the European Union. And that was something that would very much face Ukraine towards the West and away from Russia. And Russia put tremendous amount of pressure on this prime minister, or I think they call him a president, to reject the treaty. He did. The people protested, as people have a right to do in any free country. And then Russia persuaded him to crack down heavily to actually shoot people to, and I got to tell you something, let that be a lesson. Don't let people speak, let them protest, let them, as long as they're not hurting anybody, let them peacefully protest. I don't care where you are on earth, allow for peaceful protest. If the people turn violent, that's one thing, but otherwise allow peaceful protest, because when Ukraine did not, and the pro-Russian president basically shot and killed a number of protesters, that was enough for the protesters to get angry enough to overthrow the government, which they did. So the parliament, so the Yanukovych, I believe was his name, the ex-president of Ukraine, he runs away. They can't find him. The parliament then chooses to impeach him and put in an interim person and then to have elections. And this happened all last May. Again, most of you know these, but you may not know all the details, and that's why I'm going through it. And again, if you disagree with any of it, give me a call, 888-653-7543. I am giving you, though, the prelude to what happened today, and I think it's important to understand the history before we explain what happened to Malaysian Flight 777. So what happened is that Russians did not like that Ukraine had chosen a new president and had done so. Even, by the way, you know, Yanukovych's own party voted to impeach him. In fact, it was a unanimous decision. But they didn't want Ukraine to have free elections, so they went ahead and they invaded Crimea. And they invaded Crimea arguing that Crimea was mostly pro-Russian speaking, which of course it was. But in violation of the 1993 treaty that they promised to have Ukraine independence. And they didn't stop at Crimea. The next step was to take the eastern Ukrainian Russian-speaking portions. And the whole debate was Russia kept trying to have plausible deniability, kept trying to claim that this was a local thing and not a Russian invasion. And I'll explain more when we come back. 888-653-7543 if you want to join the discussion. This is Mark Levine, giving you a little bit of history so you understand the context behind today's shooting down of a passenger jet killing 295 innocent people. We'll be right back right after this.
To bring some
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine giving you the inside scoop from Washington. I am a firm believer, if you haven't heard my show before, in giving context to the news. Not just talking about the news of the day, but giving the context behind it so that people understand why we're facing the problems we are. And that's particularly true when it comes to foreign policy, because a lot of people don't follow foreign policy very closely. Some do, and by the way, I welcome any discussion on the plane that was shot down, Malaysian Flight 777 from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, and why I believe it was shut down by Russian separatists in Ukraine. But before I get to that, I do want to explain the history, and that's what I've been doing, and we'll continue to do this hour. But again, if you want to call in, 888-653-7543. So basically, Ukraine is a country that today is about two-thirds Ukrainian-speaking, about one-third Russian-speaking, maybe even higher than that, Russian-speaking. The Russian-speaking is mostly in the east and in Crimea, which is a peninsula out into the Black Sea in the southern portion, and most of the Ukraine is facing west. Ukraine is actually a classic country split between west and east. You probably can't get a country that's more split between the two. Anyway, so after the Ukrainian people in Kiev overthrew their government, and specifically the parliament impeached the president that ran away, who was, by the way, extremely corrupt. Even the people in the east, the Russians, have to concede when you see all his palaces and all the money he stole, that Yanukovych was a very corrupt president. they started to have new elections, and Russia said, here's our chance to get a land grab. We want to get the Crimean Peninsula. There are a lot of Russian speakers there. It used to be in Russia 70 years ago. We want to get this land back. So we're going to pretend that there's some Crimean revolution. We're going to pretend. And Vladimir Putin, the dictator of Russia, was laughably transparent as he tried to claim that the Crimean people were overthrowing their rulers. As he set Russian troops in, he would actually try to change their uniforms. He'd remove the Russian insignias from the uniforms. Unfortunately, apparently the troops didn't quite know their orders, because when asked by news organizations, who are they? They said, we're Russian, from Russia. We're here to take this land for Russia. So Putin tried to make it look like native Crimeans were overthrowing, and I'm sure there were some that joined the Russian brigades. But basically, Russia used its military might to steal Crimea back from Ukraine in express violation of the 1993 treaty. And in fact, after they took Crimea, Russia, and again, Russia is really one man. There's a dictator. His name is Vladimir Putin. He runs Russia. It used to be a democracy under Boris Yeltsin, but unfortunately, Vladimir Putin has taken over, as so often happens. Countries have one fair election, and then they don't have any more. In any case, Putin has now conceded that he sent Russian troops into Crimea. It's important to remember what happened to Crimea, because when I next talk about what happened in eastern Ukraine, you have to remember this is the pattern. Russia invading Ukraine and trying to deny it all and claim it's some civil war. Well, they got caught today, and unfortunately, 295 people, innocent people, died in the process. I'll tell you more when I come back. Mark Levine, 888-653-7543. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine, giving you the inside scoop from Washington. That's Mark Levine, not Mark Levin. Please don't confuse me with that jerk. I am a proud progressive radio host, but some things like foreign policy don't fall under neat progressive conservative lines. I actually think that all Americans should be horrified by the shooting down of Flight 777, Malaysian Airlines flight from Amsterdam in Holland, the Netherlands, to Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia. A bunch of people on vacation, apparently including 23 Americans dead today because of the conflict in Ukraine. The flight was flying over eastern Ukraine when it was shot down today, and they're going to do a full investigation. So I'm trying to figure out what happened, and I'm going to tell you why I believe that Russian armed terrorists, specifically people who are trying to overthrow the Ukrainian government, who are armed and financed by Russia and in many ways led by dictator Vladimir Putin, I think they are behind the shooting down of the plane. I don't think they intentionally shot down the plane. I think they accidentally did, which raises the larger questions of how dangerous it is when governments arm terrorist groups with some very destructive weaponry, and why we should make sure that really this isn't I'd like to demilitarize all terrorist groups. Anyway, so I was telling you about the conflict, and most of you follow this. It happened just this last year, and how Russia basically annexed the Ukrainian peninsula of Crimea in violation of the treaty that Russia signed in 1993. But that wasn't enough. Russia then decided that maybe it would try to take all the Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine, which is a hefty portion of eastern Ukraine. Now, this isn't what the Ukrainian people want. Even the people in the east, the vast majority of them, do not want to be under Russian rule. Let's face it, Russia is a failed state. Its economy is in shatters. The only thing they have is oil revenue, whereas the countries that used to be under the Soviet orbit, countries like Poland and formerly Czechoslovakia, today the Czech Republic and Slovakia and Hungary and Romania and Bulgaria, they're all doing very well. They've joined NATO and they've joined the European Union, many of them, and they're doing far, far better than they did under the Soviet dictatorship. And Ukraine, I would argue the more educated people in Ukraine, certainly the people in the capital of Kiev, look and see that those parts of Ukraine, that those parts of the former Soviet bloc that have joined the West, are doing much better economically than those that have followed under the Soviet rule. So anyway, most Ukrainians did not want to become part of Russia. But Russia decided to take some, and there's certainly a minority of Ukrainians, particularly in the East, those who speak Russian, who do want to join Russia. And what it did is it tried to stoke up this 25 or 30% of people to be angry. And what they did is Russia went in and invaded Ukraine. But they didn't invade it in the light of day. They didn't invade it sending tanks. They did it exactly how they did it in Crimea. They would send Russians in. They would remove the insignias from the uniforms. They would claim they were local Ukrainians. But even to this day, the leader of the separatists is a Russian. He's not even Ukrainian. And he has. What they did is they took buildings in the centers of town in a lot of major cities in the East where you have a Russian-speaking population in places like Donetsk and Slovensk, and they basically, you know, barricaded themselves in and declared an independent republic. Now, as I said, the people of the East don't want that independent republic, but if you got Russian troops there, they can basically defend themselves. Russia is a very, very powerful army. I would argue probably the second most powerful in the world after ours. And certainly nuclear armed and so forth. You know, it used to be a superpower. It's a very powerful army. Ukraine, in contrast, its army had been decimated by the, purposely, I would argue, by the Russian supporting president, Yanukovych, the corrupt one that was impeached in Ukraine. He would make sure that the Ukrainian army was weak. He was basically Putin's puppet. Well, when Putin's puppet went away, Putin wasn't very happy. He wanted another puppet. He wanted to force Ukraine to join a Russian trade treaty where it would trade with Russia and Belarus and not trade with the West. And he was willing to get that done by force if he had to. If he couldn't get the Ukrainian people to support it, then he would invade enough of the territory to persuade them to do it the hard way. Anyway, he did in the East exactly what he was doing in Crimea. He sent Russian troops in. They would help some native Ukrainians. They would fight together. They would overwhelm the government. They would take over territory in the East, which they still hold to this day. It's interesting because I was on Russian TV when this was happening about February or so. Check me out. YouTube, Mark Levine, RT, Russian TV. Ukraine, and you will see really kind of a shocking thing. I have been censored, I got to tell you, by so many people. I've been censored by people on the right, people on the left. What happened on RT was I tried to explain that Vladimir Putin was taking over Ukraine, and the Russian TV wouldn't let me say it on the air. They, in fact, the guy who was hosting, Peter Lavelle, would not let me speak, would not give, he had several guests, all of whom agreed with the Russian line that actually the Ukrainians were Nazis, and actually Russia wasn't in Crimea, even though Putin had said they was, and all of that. And so they basically shouted me down, would not let me speak. I said, you know, just give me a minute, let me explain my point of view, and then you'll have your time, and he refused. And I don't think I'll be back on RT again. But the point about it is that this is very sensitive because RT is feeding the Russian people a bunch of lies. They're teaching them that the Ukrainians are actually Nazis, literally. They're claiming that they're fascists. You know, there may be a few fascists in Ukraine, but they're not the ones. They're not in charge, and they're not the majority that are controlling this area. And it was really hurting their narrative to have an independent voice like mine say, well, actually, these are Russian troops. Russia has invaded, and these are terrorists in Ukraine, because Russia wants plausible deniability. They want to be able to argue that the Ukrainian people are overthrowing their government and it's a civil war, rather than the truth, which is that basically Russia is doing it and a few Ukrainians are supporting them. Well, the reason I tell you all that story, again, is the background to Flight 777. Recently, when President Obama came with very strong sanctions, which happened just yesterday, by the way, something I've been arguing he should do for a long time, came out with very strong sanctions, the strongest we've ever done against Russia, including their gas, several of their banks, making it hard for them to trade, it really harming the Russian economy. Sanctions which I strongly support because, after all, Russia still illegally controls Crimea. And with that, basically Putin has backed down. For those of you who don't think sanctions can work, I point out not only to South Africa, but I point out to Russia. I point to Iran, who's come to the table because of sanctions. In Russia, basically, Putin has slowed down his aid of the separatists, the people in Ukraine, this sort of terrorist group that's trying to overthrow the government and declare an independent, well, not declare independent, basically move eastern Ukraine to Russia. In any case, Putin was backing off them, and so the Ukrainian military was finally getting its act together and taking territory back. It took back the city of Slovensk, for example, and there's a few territories left in the east, but the government is slowly taking control, and this is a pro-Western government and a democratic government, and although Ukraine still has lots of issues, it appears to be far less corrupt than the prior government. So the good guys are winning, at least it's the way I see it. In any case, now the separatists are feeling desperate. So they go to their Russian backers and they say, we need to be able to shoot down Ukrainian planes. Now, again, Russia wants deniability. They don't want to shoot down planes. They don't want to do this because then everyone will say what I've been saying all along, what frankly President Obama and the United States State Department is saying. What I'm saying is hardly news in the United States or Europe because European leaders and the United States all believe that Putin is behind all of this. Again, the only people who don't seem to believe it are, well, Vladimir Putin and the people he's hired to be on Russian TV. But the point is that the Russians want to have this deniability. They want to claim that these people are just ordinary Ukrainians fighting against their government, which is a bunch of Nazis. That's the Russian argument. And believe it or not, a bunch of Russians actually believe this nonsense. And they believe it because, again, Russia doesn't have a free media. They don't allow alternative views on their broadcast. So what happens is the separatists start shooting down Ukrainian planes, including transport jets that transport goods and services, you know, across Ukraine. They start shooting down these. Now, the only way you can shoot down a plane if you're a terrorist is if the plane, normally, is if the plane is low. If the plane is very low, if it's taking off or landing, this is what Hamas threatened to do with the Tel Aviv airport. If a plane is taking off or landing, you can shoot a passenger plane in the air. There were some that thought that TWA, Flight 800, was shot down by terrorists because you can have this thing called a man pad that allows you to shoot a plane when it's low, but it doesn't go up so high in the air. And passenger jets, particularly when they're, you know, if you're flying from the Netherlands to Malaysia, you're going to be way up in the air. You're going to be 30,000 feet, 6 miles in the air. You're not going to be within the reach of a typical terrorist shoulder-held man pad. But there are weapons, obviously, that can shoot down planes that high, and they're weapons controlled by powerful states, namely states like Russia. The Ukrainian separatists, if they're ordinary Ukrainians that are against their government, would not have this kind of weaponry that would allow you to shoot down a plane 30,000 feet in the air. In fact, first the news says it couldn't be them because separatists can't have that kind of sophisticated weaponry. Well, then they looked further. It turns out that the Ukrainian separatists were bragging about the fact that they were given what's called a Buk system, B-U-K, and that's a truck-mounted system. You can't do it with a shoulder-mounted system, but you can have a truck-mounted system, and you can shoot a plane that high with a truck-mounted system. But as all the analysts were saying, and I was watching CNN a large part of today, this isn't something you can do easily. It requires a lot of training, the kind of training that only a sophisticated country like Russia could give. This isn't something they could learn on their own. This isn't some kind of manual they could read on the internet. These things are complex in order to shoot up in the air and shoot down planes. So my belief, and I agree, this is yet to be proven. I mean, I agree this is how I put the pieces together. If you put the pieces together differently, call in 888-653-7543. Let me hear from you. Let me know why. Let me know why you disagree with me or why you agree. Again, this is a free discussion, and you're free to add your 2 cents. But I believe that the only logical explanation for the destruction of Flight 777 is that Russian separatists in Ukraine, trained by Russia in using this very, very dangerous plane shooting weapon, made a mistake. They thought they were shooting at Ukraine. They thought they were shooting at Ukrainian transport. They actually shot down a civilian airliner. In fact, I've even been sent what someone claims to be a Russian language discussion between the Russian separatists and their leaders about shooting down the plane. Now, I have not verified this, but I'm going to read it to you because I have heard indications on reliable sources like CNN that one of the Russian separatist group was bragging 30 minutes after the flight came down about him taking down an aircraft. If that's true, and again, we still don't know. This is all in the fog of war. If this is wrong, I'll be the first to come on air and say I got it all wrong. But if it's true, then it would mean that basically Russia, trying to have this plausible deniability, trying to claim that it wasn't really involved, trained terrorists to shoot down this, to shoot down planes. And again, it has to be Russia because the Ukrainian separatist group, they wouldn't otherwise know how to do it. Ukraine would have no reason to shoot over their own territory to shoot something down. That wouldn't make any sense. You could argue maybe Ukraine was supporting, was shooting over Russian territory, Russians aiding the separatists, maybe. But it doesn't really make any sense. And anyway, Ukraine has denied it. The separatists, as of yet, have not denied shooting down the plane. But no one has any real reason to shoot down a Dutch/Malaysian airliner carrying Europeans to a vacation in Southeast Asia. No one has any reason to. It must have been a mistake, a very deadly mistake, as I said. 295 innocent civilians dead, including apparently 23 Americans. Again, these are just the facts as I'm getting them today. If I learn more, I'll certainly correct them as we go along. But accidentally, who would have the reason to shoot something down? And we know the separatists have shot down Ukrainian flights already. We know they've done this. They've done this with transport jets. It only, you know, Occam's razor is this wonderful philosophical principle that says the simplest answer to a question is probably the correct one. Again, it's something that we will need to explore if we're wrong. One of the things that I really like is that Ukraine has allowed the United States of America to take our very best people, and they're very good, from the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, to explore who shot down this plane and why. And specifically, they look at the wreckage. The fact that it has been spread out over a large area suggests that it was a missile and not a mechanical failure. If a plane has mechanical failure, it likely is to come down pretty much in one piece. In this case, it was spread out over a large area. It does appear to be a missile. And again, the only logical explanation I have is that Russia supplied these separatists with this missile and they shot it down, which tells me that President Obama is not only correct to do the sanctions that he did yesterday, but that, frankly, Europe needs to join in as well. Their sanctions were very minimal. But if this theory is proved correct, then all of Europe and America needs to stand together to fight against Russian arming of these very dangerous terrorist groups. And let's help Ukraine come join us in the West. Again, you agree or disagree? I want to hear from you. That's my theory. You may have a different one. My name is Mark Levine. I'm at 888-653-7543. You can tweet at me at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. Or you can just call in 888-653-7543. We'll take your calls at the top of the hour. Right back with Talk Radio News Service right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine giving you the inside scoop from Washington. Now talking to Bob Ney of the Talk Radio News Service. Hello, Bob. How are you, sir?
Good, Mark. How are you?
Good. So President Obama did sanctions on Russia yesterday, and apparently a plane got shot down today. Any connection?
I don't think there's any connection, but obviously the timing of the whole Russia and Ukraine issue is to the forefront. But the president did, you know, announce the sanctions, and Putin called President Obama a bully, which is absolutely amazing.
That's hilarious, actually.
Yeah, that's quite the statement.
Pot calling kettle black.
You know, especially after what Putin's done in Ukraine.
Exactly.
And then everybody's trying to find out from the intelligence agencies, of course, who shot that plane down, which is absolutely amazing. It's a really fast-paced world conflict today.
Well, what's the United States, what's the State Department view at the present time?
Well, the State Department, the president said that, you know, we would offer any assistance, I think, through the intelligence arena, which we could do some satellite scoping of, you know, where the missile trajectory came from, possibly if that plane flew above the clouds. So that's one thing we can do. And the president offered that. And more of the rest of the folks on internationally was, of course, with Israel and the Palestinians, which the president was urging, you know, both sides to do something. But then again, Israel said it would, of course, you know, come to the peace table. And Hamas lobbed the rockets, and now Israel is going to try to do something on the ground with the tunnels that they go through to set up those rockets to launch them into Israel.
Hamas actually went through the tunnels and came out near an Israeli village and right before the ceasefire. And then, of course, they broke the second. They didn't honor the first ceasefire. They broke the second ceasefire. And then Israel offered a third ceasefire, but Hamas didn't want to do that as well. So... mm-hmm. I just hope that that as few civilians die as possible.
Yes, and of course Israel has to defend itself, and the Middle East is a powder keg anyway, and instability over in Israel doesn't help anybody from our end, from the Western interests, of course.
Definitely not. Now, the immigration bill, is that stalled? Is there any hope that, I mean, President Obama says he needs $3.7 billion to take care of the kids that are flooding our border. Republicans say they want them dealt with as well. Can they agree on this?
Well, they do. Well, they say they want them dealt with, but they don't want to fund the full $3.7 billion, and they also want to change the 2008 law, which I would note was voted and signed by President Bush.
Right. We'll be talking about that, too. I'm afraid our time's up, Bob. No, it's a fair point. I mean, this is the law that allows them to seek asylum here. As you say, it was signed by President Bush under a voice vote. I wonder how many members of Congress signed it and now regret it. Thank you for your analysis, Bob. We'll be back at the top of the hour talking more about Flight 777. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine talking right now about Malaysian Flight 777. We are going to move on, though, later on and talk about what American prosecutors should do, if anything, about sexting and whether or not we should be creating child pornography in order to stop it. I happen to be against that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, and also about John Boehner's attempt to sue the president. Ostensibly, now get this, John Boehner, of course, like all Republicans, hates the Affordable Care Act, which they unaffectionately call Obamacare. He's now going to claim that President Obama broke the law in not implementing Obamacare fast enough. Impeachable offense? We're going to talk about that later on. But first, I want to concede that I am speculating about what went on. You know, that's my talk radio host right. I have a right to speculate. I want to be clear what I know to be true and what I think to be true. I should tell you this, though. U.S. intelligence believes a missile struck and took down Flight 777, killing 295 innocent people, including what best records show, and these are not Malaysian records, these are other records that Reuters has reported, but there are 23 Americans that are dead on that flight, according to Reuters. Again, maybe they'll find out later it was 20 or 30, but 23 dead Americans, 280 passengers and 15 crew, 295 people. And if you look at the wreckage, you see some really horrific things. For example, in one field, a Dutch passport lies open. That makes sense. Headphones and computers are scattered through a field of sunflowers. Many, many, many children were killed. A boy who looked to be around 10 was found on his side in the grass with a red T-shirt on that read, "Don't panic." Yikes. That's just awful. Just really, really awful. They see ears, fingers, bones. These are all locals, including local rebel fighters. Interestingly, the separatists in Ukraine control this area. So they're the ones who discovered the plane. They discovered the black box. That's, of course, the flight recorder that's designed to withstand a crash and should tell us a lot of things, like where exactly the plane was when it was taken down or crashed. Again, I happen to believe it's a missile. That's what U.S. intelligence believes. But it'll be fascinating to see whether the separatists allow a full investigation. I would argue if they have nothing to hide, they should simply allow everyone to investigate. The United States has said it wants to investigate. Ukraine has invited us in. That's all the permission we need. We need to go in and investigate. And some of you on Twitter have written exactly that. And I agree. I agree with you. If the separatists do not allow an international investigation, and by the way, it doesn't just have to be the United States and Ukraine. You know, if other countries, heck, even if Russia wants to join in the investigation, they should be free to, as long as they're not allowed to handle the evidence alone. I don't trust them, if that hasn't been made clear. But let's have a full international investigation. If, however, the separatists, and remember, the separatists are led. They're led by a Russian. They're not led by a Ukrainian. They're led by a Russian man who is basically held up in Donetsk in the Igor Gherkin is his name. Or he's also known as Igor Strykov. Anyway, I just know him as Igor. He's the Russian man in charge of the Ukrainian separatists. Again, if they really want to separate, why wouldn't they have Ukrainians in charge? But they have basically, the plane fell in their territory. So I would hold them responsible for making sure there's a fair investigation. It really is horrible. I'm just going to read to you some of the tweets that I have from this. Locals say everything exploded, fell in pieces, bodies and the planes itself. Burnt grass, plane, bodies everywhere, organs splayed out, too gruesome to post photographs. You get the idea. Pretty awful stuff. Now, who done it matters. Some people have tweeted, why does it matter, Mark? Who cares who done it? You know, the damage is done. It matters. Again, United States intelligence believes it was a surface-to-air missile. But the question is, whose? Again, it has to be someone fairly sophisticated. This isn't something that ordinary terrorists have. I talked about ordinary terrorists have these man-pad missiles that can shoot planes that are landing or taking off from an airfield. That's why the United States, when it went into Iraq and Afghanistan, would have planes do all kinds of evasionary measures. Israel does the same to avoid their planes being shot down as they land, as they take off. But at cruising altitudes, 30,000 feet, you need a sophisticated weapon, one that Russia has, one that, to be fair, Ukraine has as well. So who shot down Flight 777? Investigators think they will find out. I think all indications point to the Ukrainian separatists. And let me tell you why. If Russia had done it, they know how to track civilian airliners. An ordinary airliner traveling on its daily path from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, that happens every day. And apparently it was diverted a bit because of a thunderstorm. But again, nothing that unusual. Even Ukraine can find that out. But you train a terrorist group, you give them this awful, awful weapon, and they don't have the air traffic controllers, they don't have the sophistication to tell the difference between a civilian airliner and a Ukraine military transport jet. These are the same separatists that were bragging just yesterday, that they had shot down the Ukrainian jets. So, you know, they're bragging about it. And then they're also bragging that they have a Buk system, that's a surface-to-air missile, that can shoot down this plane. It's a Russian-made system. They're bragging that they have the power to shoot down these planes. They're bragging that they're shooting down Ukrainian transport planes. The news gets almost no notice anywhere in the media. And now the Ukrainian intelligence has released audio, which they claim is the actual audio that they captured between the Ukrainian separatists, these sort of Russian-financed terrorists that are taking over, that are trying to take over Ukraine, and the Russian authorities themselves. or at least the military leaders of the separatists. I do not know whether or not this video is accurate, and I certainly know that Ukraine has every reason to blame this on Ukrainian separatists. That being said, because I believe that Ukrainian separatists did this, and again, I'm speculating, but I think it's informed speculation, I'm going to read to you what the video says. I could play it for you, but it's all in Russian, and unless you speak Russian, you won't understand very much of it. I don't happen to speak Russian, so if you want to find it out, it's all over YouTube. You can look up, it's from Ukrainian intelligence, so understand the source. Understand that it is not an unbiased source. Nevertheless, it is some voices. They do appear to be speaking Russian. And if it is accurate, this is damning stuff. So again, I'm going to read it to you. You won't be hearing the sound. But this is a intercept that claims was received at 4:40 p.m. local time. That's about 10:40 or so American time, Eastern time, something like that, where Bess, a Ukrainian separatist, reported to his coordinator, Vasil Mykolaevich Jeranin. I probably just massacred that name. He's the colonel of the main intelligence directorate of the general staff of the Russian armed forces. Okay, so Ukrainian intelligence is claiming that the separatists, the ones that were bragging about having these Buk operating, these Buk surface-to-air missiles, was actually talking about it to his Russian colonel, to the colonel of the Russian armed forces, which would mean, of course, that he's reporting directly to Russia, which means what the United States has believed all along, what I believed all along, Putin is directing this thing just like he did in Crimea. Not that Putin said, shoot down this plane, but they're the ones who gave these separatists, these terrorists, the power to shoot down the plane. Anyway, let me read to you in English what Ukrainian intelligence says is the conversation between the rebel commander and the Russian colonel at 4:40 p.m. local time today. The rebel, whose name is Bess, the rebel leader says, quote, "We have just shot down a plane. That was Miner's group, and it was outside of Enakievo." The colonel, the Russian colonel, then says, "Pilots, where are the pilots?" The separatist says, "Set off to search for the shot-down plane and take pictures of it. A plume of smoke is visible." The Russian colonel says, "How many minutes ago?" The rebel, 30 minutes ago. The terrorist, according to Ukraine, the rebel separatist leader, goes and inspects the plane crash himself, personally. And we know that this aircraft was downed in separatist area of Ukraine. Anyway, he inspects the aircraft, and then this conversation occurs. So he says, those that were from Chernukinsk, who shot down the plane from Chernukin checkpoint, Cossacks that are nearby Chernukino. So he's basically admitting that they shot down the plane and says specifically who did it. He goes on to say the plane broke into pieces in the air close to Petropavlovskaya mine, and we do know that's where the plane went down. There is the first of 200 dead. We found the first of 200. It's a civilian. To which his commander responds. Waiting for the translation to show up on my screen. How are things going there? He says, well, we are 100% sure that it was a civilian plane. Are there a lot of people? A curse word I can't say on the air. The debris was falling straight into the yards. What plane is that? I haven't figured it out yet. I haven't got close to the main wreckage. Now I'm nearby the place where first bodies started falling. There are remnants of internal brackets, chairs, bodies. Are there any weapons? His commander asks. Nothing at all. Civilian belongings, medical scraps, towels, toilet paper. Are there any documents? His commander asks. Yes, one belonging to a student from Indonesia, from Thompson University. He then reports to the Russian general. As to the plane shot down nearby Snezhno Torres, I'm massacring these names, this turned out to be a passenger one. Now, that's very interesting. This turned out to be a passenger one, meaning the other ones they shot down weren't. It fell down outside Grabovo. There is a whole lot of bodies of women and children. Cossacks are now looking around there. The Russian colonel responds. The rebel continues. On TV, they say it is Ukrainian AN-26, a transport plane, but the writing says Malaysian Airlines. What was it doing over the territory of Ukraine? His leader responds, well, then it was bringing spies. Why the hell were they flying? This is war going on. That is the full quote, the full Russian language version from Ukrainian intelligence. Do you believe it? I'm inclined to. But, you know, I could be being tricked. What do you think? 888-653-7543. I'll be right back right after this. I'm reading through your tweets. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. I've been reading through them, and I'm going to read some of them after the break. Again, U.S. intelligence does believe a missile brought down this plane. It had to be a sophisticated missile. In other words, it had to be something that either Ukraine or Russia did, but Russia could have given it, it travels by truck, to the separatists. And one of the reasons why I don't think it's the Ukrainian or the Russian governments is most of them wouldn't be able to tell through more sophisticated techniques the difference between a passenger airliner and a Ukraine military transport jet. Again, Ukraine has no reason to shoot down its own jets. That's why I don't think it's Ukraine. Russia has been doing it quietly, secretly, or ordering, authorizing the separatists to do it. I think the separatists thought it was Ukraine jet. I believe what Ukraine intelligence has put out, but a full investigation will certainly show. Vladimir Putin, the dictator of Russia, disagrees. He says, quote, undoubtedly the government in whose airspace this happened bears responsibility for this terrible tragedy. So he's blaming Ukraine because it happened in Ukraine. The airport official put the death toll, 154 Dutch, 27 Australians, 23 Malaysians, 11 Indonesians, 6 from the UK, 4 from Germany, 4 from Belgium, 3 from the Philippines, and 1 Canadian. Although Reuters reports there are 23 Americans dead on the flight. According to Vice President Joe Biden, he says the crash was not an accident. The plane was blown out of the sky. The United Nations Security Council plans to hold a meeting tomorrow to discuss the plane and to ask for an international investigation. The Ukrainian Defense Ministry says no Ukrainian fighter jets were even in the area. The separatists, at least some of them, have denied shooting the flight down as well. The question then arises, why was this plane in the area at all? Well, take a look at the map. If you want to fly around Russia to the north, you're going to have to go over the Arctic Circle and around Siberia. That's hard to do. You could have probably flown through the part of Russia that's north of Ukraine. That would take you substantially out of the way over the Baltic Seas and Belarus. But if you look at the border, Ukraine borders Russia. There's a very narrow window. But if you want to get around Iran, you're going to have to go through Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria or Israel, all of which right now are dangerous or war zones. You'd have to go down through Africa to avoid all of those war zones. It's understandable why they flew in this area, although right now flights are obviously avoiding eastern Ukraine. What does all this mean for the United States? Maybe it means nothing at all. Some of you are tweeting and think this is meaningless to America. Does it matter if a dictator in Russia is arming terrorist groups with surface-to-air missiles that can shoot planes down 30,000 miles in the air? I think it does matter. What do you think? This is Mark Levine, 888-653-7543. I'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. Glad to be with you. This is, in fact, the last time we're going to hear a live show in this time slot. But Leslie Marshall is moving to afternoons, 3 to 6. I'm following along with her, by the way. I'm going to be talking with her next Wednesday and then filling in for the next couple weeks. So like me or not, here I come. And by the way, if you disagree with anything I said today or any time, always feel free to call in at 888-653-7543. Or if you do agree with me, I've been reading through a lot of the tweets, and there's all kinds of tweets out there. Some are claiming that the Ukrainian thing I just read is a, quote, false flag operation. A guy who, according to his Twitter handle, says he's an anarcho-capitalist and a thought criminal. Not quite sure what that means, although I invite him to call in, claims that it's a Ukrainian false flag operation. He points me to a Russian website that claims that this was put up yesterday, not today. We'll have to investigate that. A lot of you are calling for the United States to come in there and investigate. I certainly agree that we should do that. It should be a full international investigation. I agree with all of you that certainly say that. Some of you have said could have been a rogue person. Well, not sure what a rogue person means. This person says, what could possibly be gained by Putin? Here's what I think's happening. This is to Cherry Bethia. It's not that Putin wanted to shoot down a passenger jet. I agree. There was nothing to be gained by it. But I do think he wanted to shoot down Ukrainian military transport jets because Putin wants this area to become part of Russia. He already invaded Crimea, annexed it to Russia. He'd love to have eastern Ukraine as well. He wants to recreate the former Soviet Union, which he has expressly said he misses. He thinks it was when Russia was great. So he has every reason to try to occupy Ukraine. And to do that, he has to help the separatists. There's a war. Ukrainian is fighting against these rebels, trying to get them to lay down their arms. And so he'd love to shoot down Ukrainian planes. I fully expect it to be proven, though it's not proven yet, that Russia gave this very sophisticated weaponry to the separatists. It had to train them because, by all accounts, this can't be used without some training. It trained them how to use it. The separatists looked through the scope. They saw this plane. They said, aha, it must be a Ukrainian plane. You can't read Malaysian Airlines on a plane 30,000 feet in the air. But you can see with the radar there is one. It shot, and lo and behold, it hit a passenger plane. But the problem is that Putin is arming these rebels to shoot down planes, even if in this case they shot down the wrong plane. Some of you have pointed out that the separatists had nothing to gain by shooting a passenger plane down. No, I told you, I think they accidentally shot down the plane. They've been shooting down Ukrainian transport planes. What else do you have to say in the Twitter? I'm reading some of these. Many of you are calling for total disarmament of terrorists. I couldn't agree with you more. A few of you are saying, a few of you confuse me with Mark Levin. Please don't do that. Please don't ever do that. Look, it's my name. It's been my name ever since I was born. And actually, I was on radio a few months before that right-wing jerk, Mark Levin. I'm Mark Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E. The second E stands for empathy. It's why I'm a progressive, and he is not. He lacks empathy. So anyway, I've been reading a lot of your tweets. Keep sending them at Mark Levine Talk. I'm now going to move on to a different topic. Unless if you want to call in and talk about this, you're welcome to do so. I want to talk about something I don't think I've ever talked about in the air before. I want to talk about child pornography and sexting. How's that for a pretty clear topic? And I'm going to do something that may surprise some of you. I'm going to argue against people prosecuting child pornography. You think I'm a horrible person? Let me give you the facts of this case. A 17-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl were sexting each other. By the way, some surveys show that nearly 30% of teenagers in this age group, 17-year-olds, are involved in sexting. Wow, that's one academic study. That's huge. What's he doing? Well, he's sending pictures of himself and his private parts to this girl. Now, I'm not defending this. Please, I am not defending this. I do not think this is a good thing to do. I don't encourage anybody to do this. At the same time, think about what the purpose of child pornography laws are, right? Think about what they're doing. They're trying to protect children. In this case, you've got a 17-year-old. What did he do? He sent a picture of himself to his 15-year-old girlfriend. The girlfriend's mother saw the video on her phone, which the daughter was using. Bad idea, daughter. She confronted the boy. She told him to stop. He continued doing it. Again, I'm not justifying that. So she filed a complaint with the police. The police charged this 17-year-old boy with, quote, manufacturing and distributing child pornography. They are trying to convict him of a crime that is 4 years in prison and will make him a sex offender for life. Pretty rough stuff, don't you think? And in order to prove it's him, this is the best part, or the worst part. In order to prove it's him, they got a warrant to force feed the kid a drug that causes him to be, how do I say this on radio, causes him to be aroused. And they wanted to forcibly take a picture of him in an aroused state to show him. Actually, they weren't going to force him a drug. They were going to inject him with a drug. They were going to forcibly inject him with a drug that made him aroused and then take a picture of it and to use those explicit photos to show that indeed it was him. The picture was him. Wow. Pretty strong stuff. And they had a warrant to do it. I mean, I'd be the first to tell you the Fourth Amendment says we have the right to be secure in our persons. The government can't inject foreign substances in us, but they can do it with a warrant. So it clearly is constitutional. The teenager's lawyer said it is traumatizing, to say the least. The police want to inject you with something and they take naked pictures of you. Isn't that against the child pornography laws? What are child pornography laws for? They're to prevent adults from harming children. They're to prevent adults, sick adults, who like to look at pictures of naked children from becoming predators, from basically taking pictures of minors in situations that they can't possibly consent to. And frankly, many of them turn out to be pedophiles anyway. That's the purpose of these laws. As much as I'm not a big fan of sexting between minors, I can't say that this 17-year-old deserves to go to jail for 4 years or deserves to have the government inject him with a foreign substance to take pictures of his private parts in order to stop him from sending pictures of his private parts. Way over the top. And I'm glad to know that the press, it's interesting, the judge allowed it, but the press about this has gotten so many people upset that they finally dropped the forcible pictures of this young boy. Now, should he be suspended from school? Should he be disciplined in some way? I mean, the mother told him to stop. He didn't stop. He clearly was stupid enough to do it on her phone. Again, I'm not defending the behavior. But please, let's save child pornography for what it is, for the mistreatment of children by adults. Let's not put a 17-year-old boy in taking private pictures of him, nor should we put him in jail for 4 years for sexting his girlfriend. Again, 30%, apparently, of teens do this consensual sexting.
Our assistant producer, Ryan, thinks it's much higher than that.
Thinks it's higher than 30%.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest with you, from what I've heard, like just the way, like how much more common this stuff is becoming, because
it's very easy. Everyone's got their cell phones.
Well, now you have that app Snapchat where it sends a picture deletes it after, what, 10 seconds or something?
Yeah, but
you can save the image.
A picture of the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Kids don't think about that. They think it's consequence free.
So here's the thing, and this is something I really want to propose to people.
The other thing is, Mark, think about it. When you and me and other people were growing up, you know, we had some technology. but nothing like this, and you're experiencing sexually, you know, with your body and like other kids your age, you know what I mean? And now, you know, with technology out there, kids don't think about the consequences, nor are they, you know, socially developed enough to think about the consequences. So I think you have a powder keg with this stuff.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. If the kids have sex, and in the state where this is in Virginia, and I think there's a case in Florida where this happened. And in Florida, the age of consent is 16. There was a 16-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy. They could legally have sex in Florida, but they couldn't legally take pictures of it because it's child pornography. I think these child pornography laws have gone too far. Now, I understand the purpose. It's to stop sexual predators. I get that. But when the kids are a year or two apart, that's not sexual predators. Anyway, I'm curious to know what people think listening to my voice. This is Mark Levine. Give me a call. Did the police go too far? I think they did. 888-653-7543. Let me know what you think. We'll be right back. Whatever. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. So what do you think? Virginia prosecutors not only are charging this 17-year-old who sexted his girlfriend, who's 15 years old, not only charging him under child pornography laws that could put him 4 years in prison and call him a sexual offender for life, they actually got a warrant, which means you can go and invade someone's body. That's what the Fourth Amendment says. We have the right to be secure in our persons unless you get a warrant. They got a warrant. A judge approved injecting a substance in this boy's body. I don't know, was it Viagra, something like that, that requires him or forces him, or I don't know how this works, I don't want to get too graphic, but basically requires him to be aroused, requires him, that the medicine causes it, and then they wanted to force him to be naked, take his picture, and then compare it, I guess, to show the jury. Can you imagine? Right, he wants a jury trial. Now, the whole purpose of child pornography laws is so that strangers aren't looking at naked children, right? Isn't that the purpose of them? So the prosecutors in Virginia, my home state, wanted to require 12 members of the jury to stare at a 17-year-old's aroused private parts that he didn't want to show them. He just wanted to show his girlfriend. But they're going to forcibly take the picture, and I guess they show it to the jury, and they show the one with the girl that he showed to the girl, and I guess you're supposed to mix and match. Is it the same? Now, isn't this I need to find the
sounds
right
like
metaphor.
It's like a bad Law and Order SVU episode.
No, it's like I'm going to swat a fly. Oh, you know what this reminds me of? I saw this somewhere on the internet, and I don't remember where it was. It was probably in Florida, but I don't know where it was. Where a guy was trying to get rid of a spider on the roof, and he wanted to get rid of the web, so he made a homemade blowtorch.
Oh my god. Yeah, that sounds about right.
He burned his roof. He burned the house down. This is like taking, you know, trying to capture a fly and using a hammer, a sledgehammer, right? I mean, again, I'm not defending the boy, but come on. You're going to now require a whole jury to look at the pictures? What judge approved this? Well, it's fascinating because, again, the lawyer didn't win in court. He won in the court of public opinion. He or she, I don't know whether the lawyer is male or female. But they won in the court of public opinion. This became public, and the public said no. You don't create child pornography in order to punish someone for having child pornography. But it made me really think about all these laws and why we have child pornography laws in the first place. Look, I am all about laws preventing abuse of children. Those of you who've listened to my show for years know that I have actually taken a very leading stand in trying to prevent child abuse, which is often sexual child abuse. I've talked at length about the more than 10,000 American kids trapped in these institutions where they're routinely raped and abused. And in fact, I helped write a law to regulate these places. It was one done with Congressman George Miller of California. Unfortunately, the Republicans filibustered it. They do not apparently want to regulate rape of children. They think that's a matter for the states, even though kids are transported across state borders to be in these places. It's a disgusting thing. By the way, the law did pass the House with all Democrats save one voting for the bill, and 40-some-odd percent of Republicans voting for the bill, too. So it was a strong bipartisan bill. This is back when the Democrats controlled the House. But the point is, I am someone who has spoken out often about teenage abuse, child abuse, sexual abuse. No one can be stronger against child rape, molestation, any of those awful things than I. I don't see consensual sex between a 17-year-old and, I'm sorry, even a 15-year-old. Again, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying that parents shouldn't encourage their children not to have this sex. I don't see it in the same light as a 60-year-old man raping unwillingly a 12-year-old or 13-year-old. I don't see it the same as all, at all. Or even not raping, even if it's consensual and involves, you know, a 12-year-old or something like that. It's not the same. And pictures to me are less than the act, right? If you think if it's wrong to, look, I understand laws that prohibit things called snuff films. You know what those are? Hopefully you don't ever learn what those are, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Those are films of people being killed. They're called snuff films, and some people have a horrible, fascination with them. But the act of the murder is clearly worse than the act of sharing pictures about it. As disgusting as the people are who look at those pictures, they're not as bad as the person doing the actual murder. As disgusting as it is to look at pictures of naked children, it's not as bad as the person actually taking the pictures or the person actually abusing a child. And in this case, if I think it's okay, and I kind of do, maybe you disagree with me, for a 17, a 16-year-old to have sex. When I say okay, I don't mean okay like in the sense parents recommend your children doing this. I mean okay in the sense that the law shouldn't come down. The government shouldn't put 17 and 16-year-old or even 15-year-olds in jail for having sex. I think that's a really bad idea. If it's okay in my mind for these teenagers to have sex, again, okay in the sense of being legal, how can we make illegal these pictures? It is unwise. I don't deny it's unwise. But should it be illegal? Should they even be prosecuting this case? Should we perhaps take another look at child pornography laws and say they shouldn't apply to consensual behavior between teenagers? Let me know what you think on this one, because I don't know. Am I going out on a limb here? This isn't a subject I've talked about on the air before. 888-653-7543. This is Mark Levine. You can also follow me on Twitter and let me know by your tweets. Am I wrong here? Just follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk, or call in 888-653-7543. I think the prosecutors were out of line. They were out of line in trying to punish this kid for child pornography, and even more out of line in trying to force him to inject him with a drug that causes child pornography themselves. I just think they're way out of line. Now, does that mean that a school can't take action? Listen, if the girl doesn't want these things, get a restraining order. I'm not saying you should simply allow people to send you naked pictures you don't want to see. Get a restraining order. Complain to the school. Maybe this kid should be suspended from school. If he keeps it up, maybe he should be expelled from school. There are disciplinary actions you can take. Although, interestingly, it doesn't appear the girl minded so much as her mother minding. I don't know. Is this a liberal thing? Is this a conservative thing? Maybe it's just a recognition, as Mark Grimaldi was saying, that this happens. This happens in modern society. Just like kids smoke marijuana or listen to some explicit lyrics on their iPhones. It just happens. And I just think we've got much more severe things to worry about. Why won't the Republicans, the same ones who don't want to regulate actual rape and abuse of children, why would they support prosecuting this teen for child pornography.